The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas V. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas V. Gibbs is on the air.
Hello there. Welcome to the program. Mr. Constitution Hour here on KPRZ. My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I am Mr. Constitution. For those of you who follow the show regularly, you noticed that last week I played a replay. Had some medical issues come up, wound up not being able to get in front of the microphone. I'm glad to be back. Thank you for all you do in your life and for the cause, and thank you for being a listener to this program. All right, so we need to get started here. I've got a few things that I want to talk about that, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, is not a surprise. We have a lot of things going on in our world that would have been shocking a few years ago, but today it's part of the normal realm of things. So headline number one, Ten Commandments removed from Kentucky courthouse. The Ten Commandments have been removed from a courthouse in Spencer County, Kentucky. The Freedom From Religion Foundation was contacted by a concerned citizen who said that the display made them queasy. Think about this for a second. The Ten Commandments made them queasy. Let's see. What's the problem with the Ten Commandments? Let's see. It reminds you not to kill people, not to steal your neighbor's car, not to, you know, covet, not to lie, not to sleep with your neighbor's wife. Yeah, I guess that's enough to make someone queasy, I guess. So the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a group of atheists, said that the Ten Commandments are unconstitutional because it shows government favoritism towards religion. All right, so let's stop right there and let's explain that for a moment. What do we mean by favoritism towards religion, or this idea of separation of church and state? You know, it's funny because during the Jefferson presidency, Bible studies were held in the White House and a church service was held in the Capitol. And Jefferson, who we're told is a atheist, theist, whatever you want to call it, attended those services. He wrote in a letter to Charles Thompson, "I am a real Christian," by which I mean I believe in the teachings of Jesus Christ. He was considered a quote-unquote deist, not because he didn't believe in Christ or because he was some crazy atheist, but because he didn't necessarily agree with the doctrines of the organized churches that had control of certain states, or that controlled religion at the time. He was, I guess, he was a guy who would fit much better into a, you know, basic independent Bible-believing church. But anyway, so George Washington, in his farewell speech, says that of all of the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who would labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. So George Washington, first president of the United States, during his farewell speech, is proclaiming the importance of religion and morality. Jefferson is proclaiming, not only proclaiming the importance of Christianity, he's holding Bible studies and services right there on federal government grounds. And this idea of separation of church and state actually comes from a letter or letters between he and the Danbury Baptists in Connecticut in 1801, because the Danbury Baptists in Connecticut were basically being treated like second-class citizens because the Congregationalist Church, which is basically the Puritans by a different name, were the established church, and basically, if you were not a member of the church, you didn't get tax dollars, you couldn't hold office, you couldn't vote, And they knew that Jefferson had been a part of bringing a religious freedom with a Religious Freedom Act in Virginia years before. So when he got elected president, like, hey, this is our guy. This is the guy that's going to help us out here. So they send him a letter, congratulate him, and then say, hey, here's what's going on in Connecticut. Here's our problem. Unfortunately, the Congregationalists are treating us like second-class citizens, and we don't know what to do about it. And Jefferson writes back and says, you know, I'd love to help you, but there's got to be a wall of separation between church and state, meaning federal government can't help you. This is up to Connecticut. This is between you and the Congregationalists and the state of Connecticut. It has to be done locally. Federal government can't get involved in issues regarding the church. It did not mean that you could not pray, you could not have the Ten Commandments, you couldn't utter the name of God, because in the First Amendment, not only does it say that there'll be no established church, which that establishment clause is what they use every time for their separate church and state argument, but then it says, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So I want a pastor that preaches politics, and I want a politician that prays, and there's nothing that says he can't pray, he can't put a cross on his desk, and he can't make God, Jesus Christ, an important part of what he does. And it doesn't say that you can't have the Ten Commandments displayed at the front of the courthouse. And, you know, I wonder if the Founding Fathers understood that the left would get so crazy that they would basically be pushing Satanism. I mean, we're not just fighting an anti-religious, anti-Christian, you know, organization here with the Freedom from Foundation, Religion Foundation, but we have what we've been seeing on the Grammys and the Emmys and, you know, statues put up and clubs and all sort of stuff is an anti-God rebellion in America. And I'm going to tell you right now, getting back to George Washington's speech, where he said that religion and morality are indispensable supports for political prosperity. We turn our back on God, this country will finish its downward spiral. Now, to continue what we're talking about with the Ten Commandments display there in Kentucky, and I mean, think about this, Kentucky, that's one of the most conservative Christian, you know, with it, constitutionally minded states in the Union. So, of course, they're there to attack them. Of course, that's where the attacks are. That's what the enemy does. They hit you where you're strongest, but then they try to hit you with what they believe to be weak argument. Anyway, so a Ten Commandments display in a county courthouse violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Notice, see, they went straight to the Establishment Clause. They leave out the nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. In McCreary County versus ACLU 2005, the Supreme Court ruled that displays of the Ten Commandments in two Kentucky courthouses violated the Constitution. Or maybe they just are offended by someone they don't believe exists. How can you be offended by someone you don't believe exists? Well, there's no God, so therefore he makes me mad. Wait a second. There's no God. I mean, the Easter Bunny doesn't make me mad. Santa Claus doesn't make me mad. So if you think that God is no different than the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, why does he make you mad? Could it be because you deep down know he is real? He does exist? Just saying. So the atheists say the Ten Commandments trigger those who do not share Christian or Jewish religious beliefs. And I've never understood this triggered thing. You know, you can be so angry you can start screaming because something that somebody else believes is different than yours. Really? Have we taught our kids then to just react to everything? Oh my God, that upsets me. Ah! It's atheists say that, you know, the Ten Commandments trigger these people. Well, what about the U.S. Supreme Court building? I mean, there's literally a statue of Moses holding two stone tablets in the east pediment of the Supreme Court building. Or is that what they're riling, they're preparing for? Is that maybe what the next target is? One wonders. And just behind the chair of the Chief Justice is an allegorical majesty of law that depicts a tablet adorned with Roman numbers from 1 through 10, you know, Ten Commandments. We're appreciative that county officials realized how inappropriate it is to have an overtly sectarian religious exhibit inside a secular judicial building, says Freedom From Religion Foundation co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor. The Spencer County Courthouse will now be much more welcoming for people of all beliefs and no religious belief. Maybe we need a new commandment. Thou shalt not be a godless heathen gadfly. Perhaps. Just saying. And what's interesting about that is, so we are going to ban the Ten Commandments. Well, is that where it ends? No, that's just where it's starting. How about this? You know, you've heard, you know, the left loves to accuse anybody who disagrees with them to be book burners, yet they're the ones that suppress speech all over the place. And when it comes to books, more than any other kind of speech, books have always had an emotional quality to them. I don't care who you are, if you're a book burner, you're a problem, right? If you delete someone's blog post, which I've had Blogger do to me a number of times, I've had, in fact, every single blog post I've ever put out there about the 14th Amendment has been deleted from my old blog. But anyway, so if you delete someone's post, you know they can say, well, we're enforcing community guidelines. We're following the rules of our company or whatever. But you burn a book, well, you know, you're a Nazi. Speech is still speech, but the idea of going after books, no matter what books. That's the reason why they are pushing the garbage that they put in the schools, pornographic, you know, type stuff, because they know that trying to stop books is a no-no, and so that's why they do it that way. And the idea of going after books in particular summons all sorts of historical references, from the Muslim destruction of the Library of Alexandria to the book-burning rallies in Nazi Germany. The left has been able to mobilize so much opposition by accusing school boards and parents of trying to quote-unquote ban books by keeping pornographic books out of schools. The don't you dare be a book burner is a good argument, and it's an effective argument in most people's minds. But what about other kinds of book burning? What about other forms of political censorship? Why is that being defended by lefties? Like how they've been going after books on Amazon. Tyler O'Neill at the Daily Signal reports that the Biden team saw no apparent difference between targeting books on Amazon and any other forms of social media censorship that it was pushing. Andrew Slavitt, then a senior advisor on Biden's COVID-19 response team, had previously asked, who can we talk to about the high levels of propaganda and misinformation and disinformation on Amazon? And by talk to, they meant get rid of. So in one email produced through a House Judiciary Committee subpoena, it had an Amazon employee asking, is the Biden administration asking us to remove books? After the March 9 meeting at the White House, Amazon staff strategized how to respond to a negative story that BuzzFeed would publish discussing COVID-19 related books for sale on Amazon. Staff noted that they were feeling pressure from the White House task force on the issue of books related to vaccine quote-unquote misinformation. The resulting compromise instead settled for shadow banning the books. In a discussion, a staffer noted that we did enable do not promote for anti-vax books whose primary purpose is to persuade readers vaccines are unsafe or ineffective on 3/9, and will review additional handling options for these books with you. Redacted on 3/19. That March 9 decision to change Amazon's algorithm to avoid promoting anti-vax books appears to have happened after the meeting with White House staff. The media will predictably support this and ignore it, thus crossing another line. At some point, we'll run out of lines. The liberal left, Democrat commies, have used to love Heinrich Heine's line, where they burn books, they will, in the end, burn human beings, too. And there's some truth to it, at least insofar as the sorts of regimes that burn people tended to have also burned books beforehand. The pattern here is similar to what we saw before with the Twitter files. While externally, dot-coms defend censorship, internally, we've seen a good deal of discomfort from top execs with what they've been asked to do. That discomfort is key. A judicial decision banning the government from pushing companies to censor materials was protested on the grounds that the government was persuading, not ordering. Liberals pretended that there was no such that there was such a distinction, but the more of these cases are aired, the more that distinction collapses. Justice Clarence Thomas had warned that government agencies pressuring social media companies to censor might not be considered private action, and without that, it's just government censorship. And, you know, I got into this discussion the other day, last Sunday. I was on a show called For the Republic, which is on a Patriot Soapbox network. And on that program, I was talking about the dangers of censorship, the dangers of going after, of violating the First Amendment. We were talking, I'll take that back. It wasn't For the Republic. It was my Tuesday. It was my Tuesday show for last Tuesday for with Mr. Constitution class online. I do this on Tuesdays at 4. Now that I'm thinking about it, that's where the discussion came up. But anyway, nonetheless, so the First Amendment was what we were talking about. And the host of the show that works with me on it, a guy named Ron Partain, you know, says, well, we've got to be able to do something, though, about some of this propaganda that the left's putting out. Can't we, you know, at least use law to stop that? I said, well, the problem is, first of all, is you're dealing with an enemy that will say what you're saying is propaganda. I says, well, yeah, but we have the truth on our side. But they don't see it as truth. It's propaganda. So if you think that you can use the government to stop their propaganda, they're going to turn around and use it to stop, quote unquote, your propaganda. Do you want to open up that Pandora's box? Freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of all, freedom of religion, all of this goes many ways. And gotta be careful what you wish for there. And freedom of speech means freedom of political speech, freedom of religious speech. And so if you're going to allow, you want to make sure that government doesn't interfere with allowing us to say what we need to say, then we have to allow them to say what they got to say. And then hope that an informed, moral public who's hearing it says, okay, I can discern the difference. And I know that's it. Part of the deal with the First Amendment, part of the deal with enumeration doctrine, limited government, all of that, is you got to allow society to do what it does. You got to allow the culture to do what it does. Government's not supposed to get involved. Laissez-faire is the term. Laissez-faire means a hands-off approach, as little government influence as possible. We don't want government determining what can be said, even if it's wrong. You know, the wonderful thing about freedom is you not only have the freedom to be right, you have the freedom to be wrong. You not only have the freedom to be kind, you have the freedom to be not so kind. Now, obviously, there's going to be lines when it comes to, you know, that can be crossed when it comes to laws. You can't, you know, for example, assault someone, you know, in an unkind way and things like that. So there are certain laws in place, but overall, generally, you have the freedom to believe what you believe, to say what you want to say, and you know, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and you know, freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom of petition the government for redress of grievances, First Amendment. And that's very important, and that's what this is in the end really all about, is freedom. And if we're going to have freedom on our side, we're going to have freedom on their side. So, no, they don't have the freedom to remove our Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments is the basis of our foundation. But then the question comes up, well, then do they have the freedom to petition for a satanic display to be at the courthouse? Because that's what's going to come next. If we lose and we lose our Ten Commandments, then they may suggest such a thing. But if we win and we keep our Ten Commandments, then they will push for such a thing. Because we're dealing with an enemy that is disgusting. And so now the question is, can we use the law to stop that? And, well, once again, it goes back to freedom. If you want the freedom has to be offered elsewhere. And it creates a very difficult situation. And that's where the public, getting back to the public. If there's a public outcry, we do not accept that. You take it down. I don't care how legal it is. If there's a public outcry, then it needs to come down. Our problem is we take things down when it comes to Christianity, when one person complains. But when something like something satanic happens, it takes a large public outcry. One person complaining is not enough. We live in an anti-Christian, rebellious, world. All right, so now, one of the other issues that's been going on quite a bit, and I want to discuss this too, I think it needs to be addressed, is the border, Texas, immigration, all of that. So let's talk about that for a second. Okay, so first of all, we've talked about this, I think, on past episodes. So, is Texas allowed to defend its state against illegal aliens coming into the state? Is the razor wire fine from a constitutional standpoint? And the short answer is yes. Also, a lot of people say, well, they're defying the courts by putting up now more razor wire, good for them. Well, actually, they're not defying the court. The court never said they couldn't put up razor wire. And the court never said that the federal government had to cut it down. What the court said is that the federal government could, if they believe, get rid of the razor wire, if they believe that it was interfering with their ability to process immigrants. But the state still has a right to protect the state, and if they put that stuff up, it doesn't stop them from putting it up. It's just that the Border Patrol can cut it down if it's interfering. Now, what's funny about it is, they have doubled it up. They've put up more razor wire, and the Border Patrol said, we support Texas, and we're not going to get involved here. Now Texas put the National Guard on that on the border, or so that's what the news is saying. And we've got, last time I checked, it was like 10 states also sending National Guard personnel to Texas to help out. So the questions, there's two questions that have arisen based on that. One, can the Biden, who has said that he wants to do this, federalize the National Guard? In other words, can he say, you know what? They're now federal troops. You can't send them. You can't use them. They're going to operate the way I want them to operate. Too bad, states. No, he can't. A, he's only the commander-in-chief, in other words, in charge of deployment over the National Guard when Congress calls them into the actual service of the United States, Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution. Because the National Guard is considered, according to the Dick Act of 1903, to be a part of the militia. So if they are militia, they do not operate for the federal government and under Biden's or any president's control unless called up by Congress. And I'm going to tell you right now, the House of Representatives is not going to participate in calling the militia up to operate under the federal jurisdiction. So first of all, there's no allowance there because they haven't been called up. Biden can't just, as I'm the ruler, I'm going to call them into my... He can't do that. All right, so that's one. So then the other question was, do the states need to get permission from the federal government before sending the National Guard to the border to help out Texas? Once again, no. The militia belongs to the states first. And unless they get called up by Congress to operate under federal service, then only then does Biden or the federal government overall have any say over the deployment of the troops and how they're going to be deployed and how they're going to be used. If the federal government, through the Congress, does not call the National Guard into the actual service of the United States, there is no federal allowance on where they go, what they do. It's none of their business. It belongs to the state. The other thing that's fascinating is, as all this goes on, is Biden, in response to all this criticism about the border not being secure, and and he's caused all this problem by pretty much having a wide open border, is that during all of this, is that he has decided to blame Trump. Now, the statistics, of course, prove him extremely wrong. That's basically what Biden has done. So this is from the Western Journal. Randy DeSoto. President Joe Biden had the chutzpah Tuesday to claim former President Donald Trump and his MAGA GOP supporters in Congress should bear the blame if the border crisis created by the current administration continues. Biden pointed to Trump's opposition to a proposed $118 billion national security bill that includes, according to the Washington Post, $60 billion of funding for Ukraine and $14 billion for Israel and $20 billion in the U.S. border funds, among other priorities. In a speech from the White House on Tuesday, Biden said that all indications are the bill will not move forward in the Senate because Republicans oppose it in its present form. Well, why? It's simple. A simple reason. Donald Trump, Biden asserted. Because Donald Trump thinks it's bad for him politically. Therefore, he doesn't, even though it would help the country. He's not for it. He'd rather weaponize this issue than actually solve it. I'm calling on Congress to pass this bill and get it on my desk immediately, the president added. But if the bill fails, I want to be absolutely clear about something. The American people are going to know why it failed. It's all Trump's fault. Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends, Biden said. Except that doesn't square up with reality. For example, Biden said the only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump. So let's look at the illegal border encounters. 2023, Biden presidency, 2,476,000. 2022, Biden presidency, 2,379,000. 2021, Biden presidency, except for the first 20 days of the year, 1,735,000. 2020, completely a Trump year, 400,000. So during the last full fiscal year that Trump was in office, which ended September 30, 2020, there were approximately 400,000 individuals apprehended at the southwest border. In the previous fiscal year, the worst year of the Trump presidency, it was 852,000. In fiscal year 2018, it was 397,000. In fiscal year 2017, which included the closing 3 months of Barack Obama's presidency, it was 304,000 encounters. So the baseline in most years before Biden took office was hovering at around 300,000 to 400,000 illegal entries. But since Biden took office, there have been approximately 1.7 million encounters in fiscal year 2021, 2.4 million in 2022, 2.5 million in 2023, according to Customs and Border Patrol statistics. Why such a drastic change from Trump to Biden? It's a change in policy. House Speaker Mike Johnson released a list last month of 64 actions taken by Biden and his administration that have undermined border security. The list includes Biden directing border wall construction to end on his first day on the job and submitting legislation calling for a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. Johnson also noted that Biden lifted limitations and restrictions against immigration from certain countries associated with terrorism that Trump had in place. Additionally, the presidency rescinded Trump's Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers and placed a 100-day moratorium on deportations. Furthermore, the Biden administration suspended asylum cooperation agreements meant to stem the flow of migrants from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Biden also greatly reduced the number eligible for deportation and expanded the parole of illegal immigrants, making asylum claims in the U.S. at unprecedented levels. And that's just to name some of the 64 actions Biden has taken to weaken border security. Last week, a reporter asked Biden, have you done anything you could do with executive authority to address the border crisis? And the president responded, I've done all I can do. Just give me the power I asked for the very day I got in office. Give me the border patrol. Give me the people that judge asylum claims. Give me the people who can stop this and make it work rationally. which is patently false. The reality is Biden has not done everything he can to close the border. He's done everything he can to open it. It seems doubtful, even if the border bill passed, that he would do much different since he is not following immigration law now. And that's the thing. In Article 2, it says that the President of the United States shall faithfully execute the laws of the Union. But he's not faithfully executing existing law that is designed to better manage and process immigration in a way that doesn't just throw the borders wide open. But he's refused to carry out those laws. So he's violating the Constitution. Now, Trump posted on Truth Social The ridiculous border bill is nothing more than a highly sophisticated trap for Republicans to assume the blame on what radical left Democrats have done to our border, just in time for our most important ever election. Don't fall for it. He's right. Biden is just looking for political cover to protect him from his very unpopular border policy choices. ABC News has reported that the president's average approval rating in handling the border and immigration across seven polls conducted in January is just 29%, at 63% disapproving. Trump's not the reason the border is open. Biden is. And he should get the blame for it. But he won't take the blame because he knows that he'll go down with the ship if he does. So that's my discussion regarding the border, the National Guard, and the razor wire. Now, that said, while I don't believe that Abbott is this champion of the Constitution, and suddenly he's trying to be, it's kind of weird, the timing, election year. But also, there is video out there, and if I haven't visited it, so I don't know for sure, but I'm going to go with what I've seen, is that the border crisis there is at a park where the razor wire is. But if you go in either direction along the border, there's no razor wire, there's no personnel, and there are gates that are wide open. So one wonders, and this was brought up by my good friend Brady, who is known as the war hamster. One wonders, is that something that should be thrown up a red flag? Is that evidence that maybe this isn't about the border as much as it is a show? I mean, you know, we got this, you know, the news is all over this battle over the border in a park, in a small zone, but yet the border is pretty much wide open around it and nobody's noticing or saying anything about it. Is that something we should be concerned about? Is it a Hollywood production, sort of like January 6th was? Because that was a Hollywood production. I mean, we've got the barriers at the January 6th being breached 10 minutes before Trump had even finished his speech, a minimum 20 to 40 minute walk away. The building was breached before any of those people got there. And now we're finding out that Hollywood was actually a part of it. Have you heard this? Have you heard me talk about this? Okay, so we already know, or at least we believe we know, with through our discernment and looking at things, that January 6th was staged. You had FBI personnel that were on the scene. You had FBI personnel, you had Antifa, you had BLM with MAGA hats on, pretending to be Trump supporters. And all of the hubbub happened before the Trump supporters that heard Trump speak even arrived. All right. But what about what followed that also? Was that also a part of the show, a part of the big production? Now, this article that I'm going to read parts of for you comes from thefederalist.com. And the title of the article is J6 Committee. This is the congressional committee that looked into January 6th to show that it was an insurrection and show it was, you know, and then they have their language of how dangerous and we got to hunt all these people down and all that other stuff. That the J6 committee, the congressional committee that looked into January 6th, J6 committee, this is the headline of the Federalist.com article, J6 committee admits its show trials were an election year publicity stunt. Key members of the January 6th committee admit in a new PBS documentary that the operation was an election year publicity stunt. The entire operation. Frontline PBS published a new documentary, Democracy on Trial, chronicling the House committee's work. Pivotal players on the partisan probe conceded in the 2.5-hour documentary that the panel's public performances produced for primetime television were orchestrated as entertainment media. The one thing that we knew was the information that we have is compelling, said Illinois Congressman turned CNN commentator Adam Kinzinger. The thing we needed to do was to tell the American people, to tell it to the American people in a compelling way. The January 6th committee turned to former ABC News president James Goldston to produce their hearings that occurred just months before the 2022 midterms. The panel also hired another producer whose resume included stints at Bloomberg, ABC News, Guideline, and Good Morning America. Quote, I got a call pretty much out of the blue from the January 6th committee, Goldstein told the documentary. They wanted a storyteller, unquote. So while they were brilliant lawyers, Goldstein added, storytelling for a mass audience is not what they do. To bring in a guy like this who would think outside the box really did prove to be fruitful. Robert Draper of the New York Times Magazine told the PBS documentarians. It was Goldstein who really began to envision this as in a way, a kind of miniseries that would be sort of 9 episodes and that these episodes would tackle particular themes. First episode in the summer series ultimately pulled dismal ratings despite the committee's biggest fans attempting to encourage viewerships with free ice cream watch parties. Months before the season premiere, House Democrats conceded the committee's investigation was central to the party's plans to maintain the majority in the November midterms. January 6th committee faces thorny challenge, read a March 2022 headline from the Washington Post, persuading the public to care. The article continued, they hope their recommendations to prevent another insurrection will be adopted, but also that their work will repel voters from Republicans, who they say helped propel the attack. So the Soviet-style committee eventually became the legacy project for ousted Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney. And we know Liz Cheney, you know, she's about as lefty as they get, even though she claims to be a quote-unquote Republican from a quote Republican state. She served as vice chair of the panel. And by August, Cheney's futile bid for re-election among one of the nation's most conservative electorates was characterized as a kamikaze campaign by New York Magazine. Cheney overwhelmingly lost her effort for a fourth term and published a memoir late December. In the book, Cheney reflected on the committee's hearing or hiring of Goldstein to dramatize the hearings to boost Democrats' electoral prospects. It was not only to make sure everybody thought it was an insurrection and to play this game to convince everybody it was an insurrection, it was violent Republicans and all this other stuff, when it wasn't, and it was all a lie, it was all a show, but also to boost Democrats so that they could pull off a win the following November. Quote, he came on board and brought with him a number of individuals with years of experience in network news, unquote. Cheney wrote this. Goldstein, she wrote, and his team were exceptionally helpful in facilitating that type of presentation. And our outline for each hearing, which took the form of a trial presentation, closely paralleled that structure. You know, and I can imagine, you know, they're imagining how much Americans love the, you know, those shows with the courts and the police and all sort of the CSIs and the law and order and all that jazz. And that's what they were doing. It was pure entertainment. It was pure game. It was designed to get you to believe something through a basically Hollywood production. It was all a Hollywood production. And if it was a Hollywood, I've learned about Hollywood productions. I was in Hollywood for about 2 years back in the 90s, early to mid 90s. It's all fake. Every last bit of it. It's all a bunch of junk. And even the themes of some of these movies and these shows and stuff, which seems like it's good on the surface, it's all junk. You got your Vin Diesel, it's all about family, until the family's stabbing you in the back or whatever. You know, it's all a make-believe production. And that's what they were using for this show trial in front of Congress. That's what it was. It was a big production to convince Americans to believe exactly what they now believe. That January 6th was some violent uprising by a bunch of Republicans, MAGA Republicans, Trump supporters. And it wasn't. The people who were there that were actually MAGA supporters who saw Trump speak were peaceful, showed up. They were confused. They didn't even know what was going on. They didn't even know about the breach when they arrived. Breach happened before the MAGA supporters even got there. You had FBI agents, you had Antifa, you had BLM for the most part. I hear there might have been a few MAGA supporters mixed in that group. But most of it was staged. Most of it was, you know, and if you know, if you look at the video, the ones with the hats are on backward, that's how they knew to identify each other. That's the, with the MAGA hats on backwards, that's the Antifa and the BLM people. And it's all staged to make it look like, you know, and I've talked about it on the show before, back in 2019, you know, I have a poster from, Antifa saying, hey, you know, get out there, wear a MAGA hat, make it look like you're a MAGA supporter and cause all kinds of hell. That's what they do. That's what the enemy does. And the Democrats used it and they utilized it. And it's all this big giant false flag. And it's this big production to convince you. And everybody fell for it because they love Hollywood. And the Hollywood production convinced them. It wasn't politics. It wasn't even real. Nothing was real about January 6th other than that there were some confused MAGA people there, and they're now all being arrested and charged and put in federal prison because they were there after a false flag was created by the left. And they're destroying lives. They're ruining lives, completely destroying lives for their political narrative. My friend Derek Kennison, for example, he's going to be sentenced in September. Or I'm sorry, in April, I mean. Was in court in last October, originally, and then the case, you know, continued on until recently, and he was found guilty on all counts. He was found guilty of interfering with a public meeting when he got there an hour after the public meeting was over. He was found guilty of being on the premises and causing damage and all sort of stuff, and he never left the grass area. He never confronted a single Capitol Police. He never touched any part of the property other than the grass under his feet. He shook hands, and then his friends, and there's video of this, the four of them put their arms around each other, and they prayed for what was going on. And he said he's going to go to federal prison. They're pushing for 15 years now. Originally, they were pushing 27 years. It's been dropped to 15. That's what they're pushing for. 15 years in public, in federal prison, because he showed up, shook a few hands, and prayed, and stood on the grass, and never, never went inside the building, never went on the concrete, never stopped on any of the steps, never confronted a single Capitol Police person, but because he was there, and they got a picture of him. There's no evidence of him doing anything other than that video of him praying, and one photograph of his face there. That's it. That's all the evidence they have. And they found him guilty on all counts, and he's waiting for a sentencing, and he's going to spend time in federal prison for this. Should make you angry. Sure as heck makes me angry. And now, you've got Biden saying, we're going to hunt down everybody that had anything to do with it, even if they weren't there. I mean, Enrique Tarrio, the guy that ran Proud Boys, he's doing time. He wasn't there. Well, yeah, but he organized it. He sent out a few tweets about it. That's it. Well, yeah, but he's part of a dangerous militia group. Militia group that got together and had meetings and said things that the left considers anti-government. And that's it. Same thing with the Oath Keepers. Same thing with the 3%ers. It's not a paramilitary organization like they're trying to make them out to be. These are guys that had their meetings and said things that the administration doesn't like. Could you imagine if while Trump was president, he sent out federal goons to shut down groups that spoke out against him? He'd be called a Nazi for hunting down the opposition. But that's what they're doing. They have hunted down the opposition. Surprised I haven't been arrested just for talking about it. And now they're doubling down on it now. And so I don't know how many of you know about this, but now in Congress, the Democrats have proposed a bill to effectively ban any group that might be considered a militia. So they're trying to pass a bill that would ban having groups like Oath Keepers, 3%ers, Proud Boys. Well, how soon before the Constitution Association, my nonprofit, fits under that, because we believe, you know, that a well-regulated militia necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. How long before that's considered a militia? And they put it under that. So what we're talking about is Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts and member of the House of Representatives Jamie Raskin from Maryland has introduced a bill that would basically, and they did this on the anniversary of the January 6th Capitol protest, by the way, to double down, and they used a bunch of false information, stuff I'm just talking about, all this false information about January 6th that the general public believes. They all believe it was some big violent whatever by a bunch of, you know, Republicans when the MAGA supporters hadn't even arrived yet. And from InfoWars, it says, the bill seeks to limit most militia activity, creating criminal penalties for people who engage in certain conduct, including intimidating elected officials. So in other words, if you disagree with them, is that intimidating them? If you say, hey, you're full of it, I don't like what you're voting in Congress, is that intimidating elected official? Interfering with government proceedings. Now remember, my friend who got there after the government proceeding was over for an hour got convicted of interfering with the government proceeding. So they said, well, interfering with government proceeding, that makes sense, Doug. Well, yeah, but at what point do they cut it off there? All right, you're not supposed to interrupt a government proceeding. He's found guilty for interrupting a government proceeding when he arrived an hour after it was over and after everybody had fled the premises because of the false flag and pretending to be law enforcement. Markey claimed the bill will prevent another January 6th incident. Well, it depends. Another January 6th incident will happen if the Democrats think it'll fit their narrative, because they'll stage it. So here's the quote from Senator Markey. I hope you're sitting down for this one, because it is full of false information. 3 years ago, he said, white supremacists affiliated with paramilitary organizations stormed the U.S. Capitol, shattering windows, walls, and the families of five U.S. Capitol police officers. Not a single U.S. Capitol police officer died on the scene. One of them may have died from injuries from it, caused by a bunch of people who staged it, not the peaceful MAGA people that showed up later. And the other four, it was for other things like heart attacks, throat, you know, non-related stuff. But they're saying, oh, well, they were killed by it. No, they weren't. Shattered walls. Some windows were broken by the instigators, the plants that were pretending to be MAGA people. It's based on lies. It's based on targeting you because you dare to disagree with them and you dare to support Donald J. Trump. And as he has said a number of times, they're not after me, they're after you. Ultimately, they are. Let me continue some of their quotes, and I hope you can handle this because it's pretty crazy stuff. Quote, private paramilitary actors such as the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers pose a serious threat to democracy and the rule of law. See, the problem is, Republic, not democracy. They want democracy. And the rule of law, no, the rule of law is based on the natural order of things and God's law. They base the rule of law on what they say it is. And we must create new prohibitions on their unauthorized activities that interfere in the exercise of people's constitutional rights. In other words, they are going after the Second Amendment through the back door. Since they can't take away your guns, because every time they try, it goes against them, they'll take away your militia. They'll take away your reason for being armed. What good is keeping and bearing arms if you're not allowed to use it because how dare you collect in a group that might, you know, sound like you're against the government? Of course I'm against the government. I'm against unconstitutional government. I'm not against the government in general. I think the federal government is a wonderful thing when it operates the way it's supposed to. But it's not operating the way it's supposed to constitutionally. It's operating in a manner that's outside the Constitution. So you darn tootin' I'm anti-current government. Because it's not operating within the realm, within the limitations of the United States Constitution. Raskin claimed militia groups use political violence to intimidate people and threaten democracy. Our legislation makes the obvious, but essential clarification of these domestic extremists' paramilitary operations are in no way protected by our Constitution. I'm grateful to Senator Markey for his partnership on this critical effort to protect the rule of law, deter insurrection, and defend our democracy. No, they're doing whatever they can to make sure nobody can unseat them. Because, see, anybody that disagrees with them, they're dangerous to our democracy. Well, see, none of the Proud Boys or Oath Keepers were charged with violent offenses on January 6th. Yet they were still sentenced to decades in prison. I mentioned earlier, Enrique Tarrio, Proud Boys leader, sentenced to 22 years in prison, despite not even being present in Washington, D.C. at the time. The idea that lawful militia activity, which is constitutionally protected by the Second Amendment, which is shall not be infringed, means that what it says at the beginning of the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law. That's what shall not be infringed means. Congress shall make no law. But what they're doing here is they're making a law to kill the well-regulated militia, which is necessary to the security of a free state. The Democrat bill is ignoring the fact that there were federal assets embedded in the crowd on January 6th, that they were the ones that instigated the chaotic activities at the Capitol, because they want to stop any opposition. They want to silence any dissent. You dare say anything against them, you're going down. We're not going to allow this to happen in our government. All those baskets of deplorables or whatever. Never did get to my constitutional lesson and history lesson. We'll get to that in the future. Thank you for spending the time with me. These are all important topics. I am Douglas V. Gibbs, Mr. Constitution. This is the Mr. Constitution Hour on KPRZ, KPRZ.com. This show and my other show on KMET gets funded by you. I have one advertiser on the other show, and he hasn't even been able to... COVID killed him. Killed his business. And so he hasn't even, last 9 months, helped. This, to pay for these programs, because I pay for the airtime, because I don't want a station, I don't want a network dictating to me what I can say. I own the airtime. I say what I want to say. And you need to help me, because my credit card can only handle so much. So DouglasVGibbs.com, become a patron, donate. Go to PayPal.com, DouglasVGibbs at Yahoo.com is how you find me on that. Zelle, same thing, DouglasVGibbs at Yahoo.com. Or if you use Venmo, Douglas-Gibbs-3, and then 3975 when it asks you for the four numbers. All right, so united we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America, my friends. God bless you. Thank you for listening to the program. Thank you for being a supporter of the program. Thank you for being a supporter of patriotism. It's great to talk to you. We'll see you next time. God bless.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.